Civilization, where unknown forces strike the edge of ecology.
I recently attended a free ghost walk in the seaside town of Shoreham-by-Sea, which is based in West Sussex, England. And this was part of a festival, a cultural festival, where there were various events going on. And I just happened to stumble across an advert for this ghost tour of the area. And it was kind of by chance, really. I was in a cafe near where I'm living, and there was a flyer for it, and it was very small. It was just one line of text and a time and a meeting location. So I decided I'd go for it. So I went along. It was a Sunday evening during, I think it worked, where was this? No, it was last month. So it would have been May 2015, late May. So Sunday evening, around 5 o'clock. And at first, I thought I was the only person that was going to attend. I arrived at the meeting location, and there was an old gentleman who I assumed at the time was going to give the talk, and he did give the talk. And nice, very friendly bloke. But I was kind of a little embarrassed, to be honest, because it was just me there, and I wasn't sure if I really wanted to go along with it. But then luckily a family arrived, a small, I think about maybe a 9-year-old boy, 9 or 10 perhaps, and the mother, and I think the mother's parents as well, so there's an older couple, and but young, you know, not really old. So and another woman, a friend of hers, so basically a group. So I wasn't the only person in the end, which was a relief for me. And anyway, we had this tour. It went on for about an hour and a half, and I decided to record it. And I didn't get the gentleman's name, but I think he's a local Brighton based expert when it comes to the ghosts and the sort of mythological history of paranormal activity in Britain. And he was a fascinating guy, very knowledgeable, and I asked him quite a few questions. So I recorded the tour, and I'm just going to provide the highlights of the tour as part of this episode. Now, recording conditions weren't optimal, to say the least. It was very windy, and a lot of the locations where we were going around in Shoreham, they were right on roadsides. So there's a lot of background noise. There's a lot of cars driving by. There's a lot of wind, and I've edited it, and basically I'm providing the best of the highlights of the tour. So it will dip in and out of, but it's in order, but it will dip in and out at times as things moved along. But you get the highlights, and I think it's pretty interesting stuff. I certainly learnt a lot about local stuff in the Shoreham area, and some of it's really fascinating, really eerie, in fact, very interesting, mostly based around pubs, but also a few other locations. So if you're interested in ghosts, you may learn a thing or two.
Now, there are two different parts of Taunton, quite distinct from one another. The first are ghosts, and ghosts are people that once lived. But when they're seen, they're not always seen clearly. So sometimes, and a lot of the time, they're just seen as shadows which resemble, to a greater or lesser extent, human form. Once in a while, you will see a ghost which is very clear and very lifelike. The place where you will see that is your own bedroom.
Don't tell things like that.
You will wake in the middle of the night. You will know that you're not dreaming. You'll know you're not dreaming. And you will see someone standing at the end of the bed.
That would be mummy.
And you may, yeah, you may recognise that person as someone that lived in your home before you did. Perhaps someone who died in your bedroom. And generally, these ghosts will just stare at you for a while.
Are they real?
Sometimes they hold you in bed by your legs, distinct from an attack of the cramp.
Is it real?
No.
Wait a minute. Sometimes you will feel hands around your neck trying to strangle you. Ladies lying in bed with felt invisible hands brushing through their hair.
Is it real?
No.
But we will never know of all the people that die in their sleep overnight, how many have died as a result of seeing a ghost in their very bedroom. But generally, ghosts are not harmful, generally, although once in a while they can be.
It's not real.
Now sometimes people actually feel the ghost getting into bed with them. And I've met three ladies that have had that experience. And I asked them what it felt like, expecting them to say it was very cold and chilling. But no, they said it was warm and comforting, safe from turning on the electric blanket that particular night.
Now, I don't think that's true.
Buildings which are often haunted are pubs, and Shoreham has more haunted pubs for its size than any other town in Sussex. The first one is on this next street corner. Ghost of a person at the time that person dies, and that's called a crisis apparition. Well, in that particular unit. Right. Hospitals, now you mention it, are the third most haunted type of building. So what's the number one?
A graveyard.
No, it's a good guess. Churches are a good guess. No, you would never guess if you stood here for the next 15 minutes. World War Airfields. Somebody's written no fewer than 7 books on that subject. What's number 2?
Graveyard?
No.
Workhouse, that's another good guess. For some hospitals like Southlands and Brighton General were former workhouses. Nursing homes, no. It's actually theatres.
Really?
Yeah, whether they're... Don't forget, a building doesn't have to be old to be haunted. So a very modern building, say a block of flats, could be just as haunted as an old castle or a stately home. The reason is the ghost is probably connected with the site the building stands on rather than the building itself. And have you heard of ley lines?
Yes.
These are sources of electromagnetic and psychic energy. Where they pass across a site, invariably haunted. 1997 at the pub, 3 bottles of Pills Lager just shot off the shelf. And in 1998, a shadowy figure was seen at the top of the cellar stairs. So that's quite a lot of different ghostly happenings in one particular building. And most of the buildings in Shoreham which are haunted have several different hauntings connected with them.
So they're not all drunk at the time?
No, by no means. Now, the scientists will dismiss one person's account of a haunting, but if several people have experienced the same thing simultaneously or over a long period of time, that gives more substance to it. The two types of people, more than any others, who are likely to experience a haunting are children of your age, yes, and very elderly people. We haven't got any of those with us tonight, although sometimes
you're an elderly man.
Thank you very much.
Wow.
Well, I'm in the springtime of my senility. That's what we call it. Now, also, anyone who is Irish, Welsh, Scottish, or Cornish, because of their Celtic ancestry.
I often feel my bed
vibrate. Do you? Well, that's quite
you
a problem.
You feel things
right?
Around the bed vibrate. Right. Right. Well. Mm. Is that ley lines?
That is a typical poltergeist type of manifestation. A poltergeist is a restless, noisy spirit. Something that doesn't manifest in human form, but does all sorts of odd things. For example, it might turn off the lights. It might throw something across a room.
Just a minor vibration, and you touch things around it, and you can feel them vibrate as well. But it's not just in that house; it's in. I've had it in
other places. You might be psychic. Some people are psychically gifted.
Yeah.
Now, many years ago, a
and I was finishing a walk outside Eton College, which is over the River Thames, across from Windsor.
That's in London.
That's near London, yeah, that's near London. A granny said to her daughter, tell the man about what used to happen to you in your old home. And the family were looking to place to Ascot, where they had the horse race. And one night, the little girl came back down from her bedroom to the kitchen and asked for a second meal. She'd already eaten her evening meal. And her mother said, how come you're still hungry? And the little girl said, no, no, the meal is not for me. It's for the nice old gentleman who sits on the end of the bed reading the newspaper. Children can often see things that adults can't, even when they're with them. Animals are particularly susceptible to spirit world. It happens very often. And they do a lot of mocking. And they have a piece of equipment called an EVP, which can hear talking, which the human ear can't. Sometimes it's all gobbledygook, but sometimes it's quite realistic. Now, what would that be, do you think? Well, there's a clue next door.
Brewery?
That's a good guess. The brewery was actually out into the centre of the road, called the Star Brewery, which is another pub. It was an old coaching inn called the Star, and something very, very odd happened there 210 years ago in 1810. There was a regular customer called John Morry, and John Morry is said to have had a remarkable vision of the Battle of Trafalgar taking place at the very moment it was happening. Hundreds and thousands of miles away. What he saw was ships in full sail in the clouds. He saw gun smoke. He saw ships sinking, some which had already sunk, some which were captured, and some which had fled from the scene. So it's rather like seeing the Twin Towers and the York being destroyed. If there were no television at the very moment that was happening. And that is a very curious psychic gift, to be able to have visions. One lady who had an unfortunate vision was called Elizabeth Barton, and she was known as the Holy Maid of Kent. She had a vision that Henry VIII, who was a very nasty person,
he got really fat.
Eight wives.
That's right. He had six wives.
Yeah, one.
So it's the six wives of Henry VIII, not the eight wives of Henry VI. But Elizabeth had a vision that King Henry would die if he divorced Catherine of Aragon and married Anne Boleyn. And that was a very bad vision to have, because when she made public, it led to her being executed at Tyburn.
Yeah. So, well, she said anything.
If you have a vision,
vision
about David Cameron peeing over, don't go and tell David Express or something. Yes, and I. Are trance mediums, and they go into a trance and they can then speak in an unnatural way.
Yeah.
So a young woman medium can speak like an old man. Very, very odd. It's almost like a form of demon possession.
Yeah, it's
hard. But apparently the medium said that a young girl and her nanny, aged 26, had died in the cellar when the cellar was flooded. When there was a flood and it came up the slope, the halves, flooded the basements here. In 1990,
Sorry? When did that happen?
That would have been probably during the 18th or 19th centuries. Now, the apparition of Philippa Girl I'll mention later. In 1995, a new manager took over the pub, and one morning he went downstairs to prepare for opening and found the bar counter was swimming with water. The dishwasher had come on of its own accord, even though it was unplugged, and was spraying water everywhere. And in fact, the drain plug had been taken out and the door to the dishwasher had been closed, but it was now switched to the on position. Very, very odd. Several days later, the landlord, in the middle of the night, went down to the bar to get himself a soft drink, and all of a sudden he saw an orb of light hovering around. Orbs are said to represent spirits, people who've died. And in the centre of this orb, there was dazzling white light. And it was slightly tinged with blue, but it was large. It was about 3 foot in diameter. And it hovered between the floor and the ceiling. And it remained revolving for a few seconds, and then it faded away. But at the same instant, he saw a phantom child, a little girl, sitting by the front of the bar with her hands over her head. She had red, vivid red hair, and he couldn't see her clothing or her face, but from her size he reckoned she was about 6 or 7 years old, and when he opened his mouth to speak to her, she just faded away. A few days later, female customer told him that when she was visiting the toilet, she'd seen a little red-haired girl sitting by the floor in the entrance hallway, and was puzzled because she knew that the manager had no children at the time. And another customer told the landlord that she'd seen a woman dressed in black at a time when few people were in the pub, and 1 minute the figure was visible, the next minute visible, the figure had gone. And in October, the manager's son would stand in the hallway talking to an invisible child who he said was on the stairs, and this child had told the manager's son that the child lived in the cellar behind the barrel. Now, that may seem extraordinary, but it's not. Because in the 19th century, when towns were very, very overcrowded, poor people would have to live in basements, possibly with no natural light. Terrible living conditions, but that's the way it was. On another occasion later, a 16-year-old son of another landlord had gone into the kitchen to collect food, and as he was coming back from the kitchen with the plate of food, he heard a loud knocking sound behind him, and some live coals were found on the floor of the bar when there was no real fire. They had an electric fire with artificial coals, but these were live coals. He also felt somebody rushing by him. Perhaps the most curious thing that happened was when they had a jukebox and they had a Kylie Minogue cassette, and all of a sudden it stopped and then it came on again, and then there was strange, a girl laughing on the tape. Very, very odd. So, as you can see, a lot of different things have happened in one place going up here.
Is the monitor inside the conservatory?
Not as far as I know.
Spirits still living.
Yes.
They could well be. But, you see how here in Shoreham, this is rather a lovely local curiosity, just below the present names of the street, they have a sign telling you what the street was previously called.
White Lion Street,
yes.
Why did they change the name?
Well, the White Lion was the emblem of the Mowbray family. And I believe it was probably when Arthur Shoreham was lost, because we've got Arthur Shoreham left. Where was the other half? Where the river is now.
Oh, I see.
Because all these streets continued across the high street, and where the slopes are, the halves, they continued right across to Shoreham Beach. And when the Ada changed its course, the whole area was flooded and abandoned. Right.
How was
the haunted house? Can you see number 53 across the road? House on the left, number 51. And someone who lived there told me this story. She saw a figure sat on the end of her bed. As she watched it, the figure got up and walked through the wall into the adjacent house, where it was seen by the occupant there, who was a school teacher at the same time. And that, to me, is a unique, bear in mind, I've studied hauntings all across Britain. I've never known of another haunting like that. Plenty of hauntings where the ghost walks through the wall, but not where it's seen both sides of the wall. And of course, what are ghosts made of? They're part physical. So if one was to brush by you, it would seem as though it was another human. In fact, a lady in Chichester told me some years ago that she and her colleagues get pinched from behind by invisible fingers. And it's not the dirty old boss that does it. There's never anyone there at the time. They also have a spirit essence, which means that they can move through walls, go through a wall or appear from a wall. And the cellar of the house, on the warmest of days, always seems ice cold, and the cat will always react to it. And that's just in a little terraced house. I'll tell you about the experience I had, which was many years ago. Although I have a driving license, I don't drive as a motorist. So, as the course of my work, I was being driven by a colleague, and we were returning from, I believe, Chelmsford or Colchester, and coming back on an A road, not a motorway. We just turned a bend in the road, and a few hundred yards ahead of us, a van, I think it was, had stopped for some unexplained reason. And at the speed we were travelling, there is no doubt that we would have had a fatal collision in the short time we saw the van. And at that very moment, the steering wheel was taken out of my driver's hands. It was passed through his hands far more quickly than he could have turned it himself, and we just avoided what would have been a fatal collision with that van. And that's the first time I've ever seen anyone turn white. He just turned white as this happened. I knew what was happening, but he didn't understand. And this is the sort of supernatural happening that is particularly useful.
Yes,
moving
angels as well.
Oh yes.
Seen an angel?
No, I haven't. But then they are not all young men with long blonde hair wearing mitres. Oh, they take all sorts of different forms. There's been interesting incidents where people have been in an aircraft, passenger aircraft, and one of the engines has been on fire. And it's been a situation that would have led to a crash, and they have looked out of the window and seen figures of the first port of the aircraft.
Mm-hmm.
It is. It's extremely amazing.
It can just look like a normal human being.
And hauntings on ships are particularly interesting because seafarers are notoriously superstitious. And in the earliest days of theatres, almost every theatre has a green room, as we call it. Green is a superstitious colour because theatre scenery has to be moved, blown by ropes. Some of the earliest scene shifters were former seafarers, and they are very, very suspicious by nature, and that is why in a theatre that is staging the Shakespeare play Macbeth, you never ever refer to it by its title. It's always the Scottish play. Mm.
Mermaid's reel.
No?
Mermaid's reel.
Well, I was listening to the radio the other day, and they were talking about an incident somewhere in this country where they are said to have found a mermaid on the beach.
And
the way they described it was a long sea creature that had the fins of a fish and a head that was part human, part animal.
Did it have a tail of a fish?
Had a finned tail, yes, like a big fish. Yes. Yeah.
There can be mermaids, can't there?
Yes, there can. Yes, that's true. Well, there can be werewolves as well. And there was a photograph of two boys from South America. This was in one of the Sunday newspaper cover albums many years ago. And they were completely covered, including their faces, with very, very coarse black hair. And they had a very rare medical condition, an abnormality. And they were just like a werewolf. Vampires, very commonplace. People who drink human blood.
Yeah.
And when the acid bath murderer, John George Hayes, was put on trial, in the evidence, the counsel for his defence said that he'd acquired a taste for drinking human blood after he was in a car accident and his head hit the windscreen of the car, and as the blood trickled down into his mouth and his forehead, so he acquired his taste for human blood, and before he dissolved his victims in acid, having shot them, he is said to have drunk some of their blood. But the reason why this was before the trial was that, of course, it was all a bit staged, because it was tried to make him out to be a madman. Because if he could have been proved to have been mad, he really weren't prepared to accept that. So he was hanged.
And killed?
Yeah.
Mm. Yes, it's normally fatal.
Are they actually real vampires?
Well, no, it's a legend that goes back to Eastern Europe. And it had a very strong foundation because people used to be buried alive. It's called premature burial. The reason how this could happen would be that if you were in a coma 400 years ago, people wouldn't have understood what was happening to you. They would have thought you were dead.
Yeah.
So they buried you. And then where it was suspected that you'd been buried alive, they brought up the coffin, and if they found the body covered in blood, and if they found scratch marks on the underlid of the coffin, you definitely had been buried alive. And it was reckoned, believe it or not, that up to 40% of those buried in the early part of the 19th century were buried prematurely.
Mm.
Oh yes, yeah.
Buried
alive.
Alive.
And what's even worse is being cremated alive.
Oh my God!
And we know that that happened in Nazi concentration camps. But my mother spent her career as a nurse And she told me she was working in a London hospital on one occasion when she heard screams coming from the mortuary. Well, this is why, when you were cremated decades ago, in the early days of cremation, they would always slit the skull, slit the throat, before they put you in the cremation. Just as if you are buried at sea, when they wrap you up, the last thing they do is to push a darning needle through your nose. Because if you are in a coma, that will bring you back to life quite quickly. That was a precaution.
When was the person buried alive from when the person heard screams and earth?
Well, my mother, no, this wasn't somebody who was buried alive. This was somebody who'd come back to life in the mortuary.
What?
Before they were buried or cremated.
They were lucky,
then.
They
were lucky.
They are.
Burial is a very interesting subject, albeit a morbid one. And over the last month in the Brighton Festival, I've been leading a grim and gruesome graveyards tour, where we go round all the old churchyards in the centre of Brighton. Over. Just couldn't believe how the weather's changed, could you, for this morning?
Is every house haunted?
No, by no means.
Is 8 Montague Close haunted?
But which close?
Montague.
I haven't heard that it is. Not to say that it's not.
We might not be haunted. We might.
Now, this is the office headquarters of the Federation of Sub Postmasters. It's built on the site of an old Victorian house, which had been a girls' boarding school at one time, and during the last World War was a billet for Canadian soldiers. And one soldier had a pet mongrel dog, and the dog always refused to be taken up to the attic, and if it was carried into the attic it would go absolutely berserk. Now most evenings the soldiers would go out into town, they would go to the local pubs, to the cinema or into Brighton perhaps, and the few that stayed behind used to go down to the ground floor and spend the evening in the lounge, basically listening to the radio or writing letters home. But on occasions, phantom footsteps would be heard on the bare wooden stairs. The carpet had been removed. And when anyone bothered to investigate, of course, there was absolutely no one there. So nobody took these footsteps seriously until one soldier decided to play a prank on the others. He crept to the top of the stairs with a length of chain because he thought hauntings were always accompanied by rattling chains, and as he began his slow descent down the stairs with very deliberate footsteps to scare his comrades who were in the lounge, he'd only taken a few steps when he heard footsteps of someone coming behind him. And he turned to look round, and the next moment the footsteps had gained on him, and there was an immediate sense of coldness and the swish of invisible cloth brushing his hand, and then he heard the footsteps ahead of him dying out as they descended the stairs. So the prank which he was playing on his comrades had backfired. Right, we are now going to a haunted house in Buckingham Road, just around the corner.
I'm
going to tell you what the person who lived there, or may perhaps still live there, told me happened to them.
What's the most haunted house in the world? Does anyone know?
Of course, there are a lot in America that are famous to the Americans because books have been written about them or films made.
That Borley Rectory, that was quite notorious.
Yes, that's one of the most notorious in Britain, in England.
Which one?
Borley Rectory, which no longer exists. No, it's in Essex. It's on the Suffolk border near Sudbury. But that caused a sensation when a psychic investigator called Harry Price wrote a series of newspaper articles and books about it. And then in his retirement, in his latter life, he admitted that some of his writings had been fraudulent.
Right.
But the church at Borley, as well as the rectory, was haunted.
Right.
And it's said that the site still is. I don't believe the site has been so notorious. I don't believe it's ever been sold for redevelopment.
Wow. Yeah, there was that recent television drama about that famous poltergeist case in the 70s in Britain.
Yes, that was at Enfield
Hall. Yeah, that's it, yeah.
Yeah, well, a man called, the investigator there was a man called Gross, and the poltergeist manifestations followed him back to his own home.
Wow.
But that was quite violent. That involved teenage children being thrown off their feet and furniture being hurled around.
Yeah.
Somebody called Guy. Wrote a book on the case.
Yeah, I've heard the audio, the alleged audio of the voice.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's quite eerie.
It's
very strange. It's difficult to make out if it's genuine or very cleverly done.
And it was sustained over quite a long period of time.
Yeah.
The film industry gets hold of a spectacular haunt like the Amityville Horror. The film is an embellishment on the book, and the book is an embellishment on the newspaper articles, and the newspaper articles in turn are an embellishment on what actually happened. So it's rather like the same Chinese whispers.
Yeah.
Something which gets blown out of all proportion over a period of time.
And of course there is the sensation right to the film.
Yes. But I always think that fact is stranger than fiction, and that you don't really need to embellish a good story if the story is genuine.
You're making a film, it's got to happen in 2 hours.
Well, not only that, it's got to be presented according to the dictates of those who are financing it.
Yep.
And, you know, they think that it's rather like the most... rather like the most recent remake of the Titanic. You know, it hinged upon this improbable love story, Leonardo DiCaprio and Kate Winslet, which would not have been possible to have taken place on board the ship, where the first class and the steerage class were completely segregated. It was just a total romance.
Yeah,
but it was good, and I mean, you know, as a former manager, I don't generally like remakes, and we've had several cases where
The Americans have remade a British story. The two good remakes, I thought, were the second or third remake of The 39 Steps, that's the version starring Robert Powell, and the third remake of The Titanic. Right, we've got to find number 49, which should be up here on the left. Not that far up, I'm pleased to say.
There's even a theory that the Titanic never sank, isn't there?
Oh, yes, maybe that.
What are you looking at?
That's written. Well,
what are you looking at?
On the basis that they changed the names.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's an insurance scam.
Yes.
Yeah, interesting.
Yeah. It would be fascinating if that was approved.
Boat under, in the waters.
Yeah. The theory is it's not the Titanic, it's the Lusitania.
Told me that her daughters and sometimes visitors that were staying there would always refuse to sleep in the big bedroom, because when they went into the room they were fazed by something or someone that was there, and that they would rather occupy the smaller bedroom. And it was thought that one of the previous owners was an old lady who was a seamstress. That means she worked with a sewing machine on cloth or whatever, and used that bedroom as her workroom. On the landing in the house outside the bedroom door there was a strong presence, and this was so strong that the lady living there at the time felt that there was somebody standing by her side. It was very, very intimidating, so much so that on occasion she would have to leave the house and go into the garden to get away from this force. And the dog would stand at the bottom of the stairs looking up at the landing, just howling. And these occurrences occurred just for a few months after they moved in, around 1989. So that's comparatively recent, because not all hauntings date back centuries. Right, we're going to finish with a haunted supermarket site. That involves the haunting of two children. Zombies are really something that the film industry has taken up on. The creation of the film makers.
Yep, they're not real.
Now Dracula is quite interesting, because Count Dracula was an invention of a theatre person called Bram Stoker. And it was based on a Hungarian, Transylvanian count called, prince called Vlad Tepes. He was a very savage character, but he was regarded by the Transylvanians as a national hero. And so you can go and visit Castle Dracula. It's quite an important tourist attraction. Bram Stoker, in his book, talks about Count Dracula's body being brought to Whitby in a coffin, and then Count escaping from the coffin.
Was that a real event?
Well, Vlad Tepes, who was the origin of Count Dracula, was real enough. But of course there was a lot that was rather like Robin Hood, there was a lot that was attached to it. This whole site used to be occupied by the workhouse. What a workhouse was, every parish had a poorhouse, which was
a ramshackle old building, perhaps a little row of cottages, in which very, very poor people lived. And this was the days before you had council housing or sheltered housing. So you went to the poorhouse. Then in the early part of the 19th century, around 1834, poorhouses were all shut down, and in major centres a workhouse was built to cater for all those people that lived in the poorhouses. And the workhouses were designed like prisons. So children were separated from their parents, fathers were separated from mothers. And the National Trust actually manages a former workhouse at Southall in Nottinghamshire, just outside Newark. Now, the workhouse on this site has long since been pulled down and replaced by the supermarket. But when the old buildings were not being used, were empty before they were pulled down, sometimes phantom music would be heard when no musician was present. And the three phantom sounds I mentioned earlier, the musical instrument being played when there's no musician, the choir when there's no singers, or the whispering. You can also incidentally get phantom smells, and they are the nice smells, which are always pungent plants or perfumes like lilies of the valley. They used to say when a good person died, at the moment of death he gave off a pleasant odour. Or you get the evil types of smells, which always smell sulphurous, like rotten eggs. Those are the two
from
types
of volcano.
Never caused by block drains or whatever. There's never ever any logical explanation. There was also a haunting in the old workhouse buildings, and a man was seen in Victorian costume wearing a top hat, with two young girls wearing a uniform with starched aprons in front. And this was thought to have been one of the teachers of the workhouse, or perhaps the workhouse master himself, with two of the pupils. So the theory is that sometimes almost the ground can absorb happenings from decades ago or even centuries ago, and when a person that is receptive to those is present, then you'll get a sort of playback situation, rather like playing back your holiday on a DVD or whatever. So there we are. Thank you very much for joining me this evening.
Thank you.
I'm just so glad that the weather's changed.
So are we.
Yeah. Some more walks in the programme. There's a walk at Southwick, which is the first time I think Southwick's ever been covered during the Ada Festival. And there are a number of other historic walks, including the history of the beach and bungalow town, the side streets and the passageways, and the history of the pub. All the details are in your festival programme.
Thank you very much.
Have a safe journey home. Thank you very much.
Bye.
Thank you. Here we are now.
It's only as true as you want
it to be. Yeah. Don't have to have any nightmares. The information where unknown forces strike the edge of ecology.